Hadi bakalım. Hadi bakalım. Hadi bakalım.
The internet will not let Jeffrey Epstein die again. And we are here for it. We're going to talk all about it today, the newest revelations with the Jeffrey Epstein saga. Do you think he knew when he, quote unquote, died that his legacy would live on in such infamy?
I'm sure when he's sitting on a beach, you know, scrolling Twitter, watching all this, you know, because it was a body double, of course. Well, no one believes he actually killed
himself. I'm not saying that. Some people are saying that. Although there was, did you see the overhead drone images from some rogue drone pilot that captured a guy on Epstein's Island driving a like gator or one of those like side-by-sides around, and it looked like him?
No, I did not see that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah. He might be still alive, just chilling on his island.
Or just got bought by a different guy who looks similar.
What? What are the odds of that? Come on.
Hit the sound. A Jew. Like the thing you dip your sandwich in.
Eat it. A Jew. A Jew. Brilliant. Brilliant. A Jew.
Racial jokes.
There we go. Welcome right. back to Human Reaction. We're so glad to have you with us today. We are going to be covering the Epstein story, as we mentioned, on this one. So, David, why don't you kick us off with our little clip here?
This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at revveduppromo.com. That's with two V's and two P's. Or just check the show notes for a link.
We're back in the news, baby. And at least Epstein is all over again, thanks to our boy, Thomas Massey. And you can't get better than Thomas Massey. And they put out a new video of Thomas Massey in this battle that he's got with Trump right now. Because, you know, obviously the super PACs are dropping their ads. So some folks on the ground, regular patriots, put their money together to stick it to... Well,
Big MAGA.
Big MAGA, I guess.
Yeah.
Or MEGA, depending on what you think. And that's, I mean that technically, not just my weird accent that I said that was, I mean like MEGA.
MEGA.
The MEGA group.
MEGA. Oh, is that what it's called?
Yeah. You know what the MEGA group is?
The MEGA group?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Oh. The Jews. But it's true. It's like very well. It's a known thing. It's a very wealthy Jewish billionaires who are very, you know, in general, pretty very pro-Israel and have funded a lot of things in American politics over there.
And so they're attacking Thomas Massey, obviously, because he has been very independent. He's been very critical of AIPAC and how all the congressmen have their AIPAC representative and stuff like that. So is that why they're kind of targeting him?
I don't know if Meg is doing it. I was a bit of a joke. I just mean donors. And actually, we're going to get into one of the people doing it who happens to be in the client list in the black book, in the Jeffrey Epstein black book that's already been released.
Okay.
Anyways, roll the thing.
You have sat through now almost 2 years of hearings in this Congress where we've exposed lies at the CDC, shortcuts at the FDA, unconstitutional gun bans at the ATF, over prosecution of January Sixers at the DOJ, targeting common citizens at the FBI, spying by the NSA, illegal mandates for livestock by the USDA, targeting transgenic plant vaccine at the NSF, and censorship, the censorship industrial complex of which the NSF is part of. Most Democrats are just fine with this kind of totalitarian state that the bureaucrats are pushing on us. But Republicans at least pretend to be against these things. But what are we going to do this September? We're going to fund every freaking one of those things that we have exposed.
It sets up a fake fight that we all know here is fake. Somebody come down here and tell me it's not fake. You all know it's fake. The compromise has already been reached in a smoke-filled back room here.
But that's what it is political theater, folks.
Oh man, it's so good.
It is so good. It's delicious. In its entirety, it's almost 13 minutes long. Mm-hmm. But worth watching. It's really stirring if you're a fan of Thomas Massie.
Man, I'd sit here and watch it for the third time if we could on the show. But yeah. It would feel like I'd be taken from it.
Yeah.
So there's a teaser, a little wetting of your whistle.
Yes.
Go watch the full thing.
Props to Dan Smotts and Tom Woods, right?
Yeah,
for producing that.
Tom's idea, I guess, and he just said it on his podcast and people were like, we should do that. That'd be a good idea.
I love that.
So what happened right before, just take you way back a whole month ago, they had a he brought his discharge petition to release the Jeffrey Epstein files, like more files. There's a hard limit on this act, just to keep you in mind, but it does include the financial information. So that's really big. That's where the real money's at.
What's the hard limit? What's that mean?
The hard limit is basically it instructs the Pam Bondi to review them before she releases them. And if there's any like victim information that's particularly to censor that out.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
If Trump's mentioned anywhere in them, to make sure to redact that part.
Oh, we got a story on that part too. But anyway, so yeah, it's in the news, and we're not covering just not only because we cannot let this story die, and I'm one with the internet on not letting Jeffrey Epstein die again, but rather also that this is like the pivot point of the moment in a lot of ways, and distinguishing, and they actually get into Jeffrey Epstein in the dissident video or that video that we just saw, that. You know, the difference between these guys on this issue. And it's really become the narrative of the moment. So he did an event. That was right before the August recess. They recess a week early just so he can't get signatures for a discharge petition. I'm sure for the entirety of the trip or to Israel that everyone did, they probably got a talking to about that. I don't know, maybe.
Okay, hold on. The trip to Israel that everyone did?
A bunch of congressmen went to Israel over their August recess.
Because the beaches are nice?
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah, I've heard there's nice beaches in Israel.
There's also lots of... Play the song. Jews. Okay, well, enough of that gag. All right, enough of that gag.
It's a good gag.
I love Jews. All right, so...
Jews.
All the Jews. Okay, so there's got back first day on, he does an event with Marjorie Taylor Greene and the Democrats co-sponsor, space his name right now. Kohana, is that right?
Rokana.
There we go. And they do this press conference. We're not going to really watch the press conference. I watched it. This is one of the tweets from it. Survivors at our press conference announced that they are privately compiling their own Epstein list. They would be sued into homelessness for naming names, but Marjorie Taylor Greene and I are willing to name names on the House of in the House of Representatives under constitutional speech or debate immunity.
This was interesting. He explained this when he was on Theo Von's podcast about how you are unable to be sued for like defamation or something like that. You can say mm-hmm. anything you want under the protection of the law from the floor of the House. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Right.
Things you couldn't say outside of that environment.
Yes.
So if you and I Absolutely. Said that or somebody else published their Epstein list, it could be defamation or whatever, mm-hmm. but they could say it.
Right.
Cool.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. I'm curious in this case though. I mean, obviously there's a lot of, it would be hearsay, right? If the victims were to be putting together their own list of you know the Epstein clients, and they were to read it, how much evidence would there be backing all of that up other than their word?
Just their
at this
word.
Point,
that's the word, and that's part of like I think of it more as a political lever, right? They're just saying release the files so that we can get all the information. Otherwise, you're just going to have this lingering rumor,
right,
set on the House floor of your name. And what's interesting here is there were new victims who went public at this event.
Really?
Yeah, getting up saying, I was minor number whatever in this lawsuit.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So people who were named in the lawsuits and in the depositions and stuff like that, just coming out and putting their names to the situation.
Yes. And at least another part of this that I do think is interesting, we'll get into a little bit later, is how there's been some interesting questioning of the story too, especially if you're one of the people on the list and you are doing everything you can to keep it from happening behind the closed doors, you know, that some of these people have been not that reliable. Virginia Gough, for example, basically said Alan Dershowitz was one of the people that was involved in a sexual allegation. And I'm trying not to say the words on YouTube. Not that weird. I saw you going for it. totally lost track of that. Oh yeah, so you don't want those people, you know, just spraying out names
right
to congressmen to say your name on the floor. So maybe it's better actually to release the files. I mean, that is how I really see this threat.
Yeah,
is more so a threat. That said, hopefully, if they do it, because you know, I'm sure there actually are innocent people who were, you know, just took a meeting with Jeffrey Epstein, that might get wrapped into this. But that is less damaging, you know, something you can navigate better if you have full disclosure than if you just have a name go out on the floor.
Right, right, right. So, sure. Yeah. Your point was that Virginia Giuffre had mentioned Alan Dershowitz and then what?
Oh, yeah. And then basically he sued her and then she ended up settling and basically said, you know, part of her settlement was I made it up.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Whether or not she really did, that was the settlement.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because it's, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a he said, she said sort of situation, which isn't going to stand up in civil court very well.
Right.
So, and part of this, I think, is interesting, is in an interview, they're bringing up these, you know, because part of this dynamic is seeing it through the lens of a Massey versus Trump dynamic, right? Because he was giving him a hard time about the big, beautiful bill. He said, you know, you're a first-rate or a third-rate politician again, and a grandstander,
yeah, yeah,
all that stuff.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna primary you and get you kicked out of Congress. And he didn't change his position. And since then, there's been like this tension, right? Massey released this week that some of the people spending money in his district on Trump's behalf, specifically a guy named John Paulson, are on the Epstein Black Book. And is a major donor to the America First Action Fund that's spending money in
for people that aren't familiar, what is the difference between the Black Book and the client list?
Well, is there a client list? You know, like, what do we mean when we say that? That's kind of a meme.
Yeah.
I think it's a meme stand-in for do the actual investigative work to find out whether or not this was a compromise, you know, scheme. And let us know who was compromised. Because that's kind of important information for the country to have.
Yeah.
The Black Book is actually releases from, I believe, 2015 or 2017. Kyle would know. That came out to the public disclosure.
Gotcha. So these are names that were in a document possessed by Jeffrey Epstein that have been released.
Yeah. He was probably part of the flight logs, took a flight with Jeffrey.
Sure. So he's in some way involved with Epstein and is interestingly also spending money against Massey, who is trying to put pressure on the release of more files regarding Epstein and his associates.
Right. Now, obviously, that decision was made before this moment, right? This guy's probably donating to the MAGA fund for a while. But it kind of shows you, I mean, when you especially looked at like Jeffrey Epstein's neighbor is like next to Trump all the time. You know, like he's part of the administration in a special capacity.
Who is that?
It's the guy, same guy who bought the Twin Towers.
I'm forgetting.
Is that right?
I can look it up, but
I can't remember.
But yes,
but yeah, I know. Right. I remember Jeffrey Epstein's number, and I've seen it a ton. And like, he's always just like behind Trump, and he was actually caught. Not caught, but he was on video just a little while ago talking about Israel and whatnot.
Yes.
Yeah. Non-trivial.
Larry Silverstein is his name.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
So, and then the petition right now where it sits is it's got a bunch of Democrats on and just a couple Republicans, pretty much Massey, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Nancy Mace, who also spoke at this event. Nancy Mace did.
And I remember there being a clip this week of Nancy Mace leaving some of these interviews with Epstein victims, and she obviously looked incredibly upset. There's, you know, a photo of her walking past all the press, you know, storming by them, very clearly had just heard some very disturbing things.
Yeah.
So, you know, was this like an interview specifically with members of Congress and victims, or was this like a public?
I think she got into it. I actually didn't track that close enough to tell you. But yeah, that was the story, is that she had been interacting with these victims or accusers. I prefer accusers because that kind of gives a little bit of distance, because we have had several accusers with some unreliable testimony in the past in this story.
Yeah.
But yeah. So we have the blowback from this from MAGA Inc. is what I'm calling it. here we got Insurrection Barbie, who I'm pretty sure is just run by Mossad. But Thomas Massey doesn't give a damn about the Epstein files, and neither does Ro Khanna. If they did, they would have been performing these theatrics under the Biden presidency. They didn't do it then because it didn't serve their personal interests. Now it does. Democrats want to use this to destroy Trump, and Massey doesn't care about anything except his 2028 presidential run.
Massey for president? You know?
You can see it. You know, the rolling hills of Kentucky? Him just sitting out there be like, I'm like Frodo.
Yes, dude. Cast the ring into Mount Doom. Let's fucking go.
Yeah.
Massey for president 2028.
So I think this is a decent criticism of the Democrats, but not of Massey. I mean, come on. Like, the guy is so consistent.
For sure.
And he definitely, and this is, there's been a big blowback to this. He's been tweeting about it forever.
Well, and in his America First, Massey America First video, he even mentions it in an interview that, like, that Trump said, like, this is the second time he's done this, you know, the grandstanding thing. And he's like, no, this is like the eighth time I've done this. Like, this has been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
He stood up to the all the spending around COVID. Mm-hmm. And he's been a thorn in Trump's side for a long time, longer probably than he's even been on Trump's radar. Mm-hmm.
So we got Michael Knowles here. 2005, Epstein story breaks. 2015, it becomes a national news story. 2025, Trump threatens to primary Thomas Massey over spending bill. 4 months later, Massey mentions Epstein for the first time and makes it his personal crusade. Funny how that timeline works. I mean, it's just like, you have literally the best, one of the best guys in Congress. Like, yeah. If we had 150 Thomas Masseys, there would be very few problems in Congress, right?
Oh, man.
Things would be a thousand times
think about
better.
The country we would live in. If there were 150 Thomas Masseys in Congress.
Spending, the Fed, foreign policy, MAHA. You want a MAHA? 150 Thomas Masseys would go a long way.
That would be. Think about all the regenerative agriculture outfits that would exist around the country.
The whole power bill of D.C. just
plummets.
Just plummets. They're all driving Teslas and...
No, it's all run by an off-grid solar farm.
Yeah, right.
Chicken tractors roaming on the National Mall.
I love it. This vision is beautiful.
It's beautiful.
So, of course, that's false, and he later admits it. But there's like this. There's a whole bunch of archive stuff, and he does correct it because he did tweet about it in 2024. But it's so ridiculous, and this like narrative they're trying to generate is just absurd, going as far as saying, if you want to see the Epstein client list out, you are no longer MAGA.
Wow.
From Bill Mitchell. Don't attack Trump over Epstein, then tell me you're MAGA, because you aren't. You're a useful idiot of the left, just like Massey.
Wow. Okay, hold on. Hold on a second. Didn't Trump actually campaign on this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't a central piece. I'll give these people that. But it was a couple times, right? I mean, a couple times, strangely, very closely related to the time frame when he was assassination attempts were done on him. Mm. This is an interesting post from Being Libertarian. Have you noticed that both times when Trump was asked about Epstein during the campaign, there was an assassination attempt shortly after? I also noticed he changed his mind after the attempts have gone away.
Interesting.
So this is interesting. So with the, this is with an AI bringing up the dates, but Lex Fridman on September of 2024, and then the first assassination attempt was September 15th. The second one, September 15th.
Yeah. July 12th was the mention of it, right?
Yeah. And July 13th.
July 13th was the Lex Fridman interview. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Interesting. Were those the first times he had mentioned it publicly? Like on a press platform, like, you know, a podcast or something?
You know, I don't really remember it being mentioned before the campaign cycle. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, a lot of this stuff goes down right at the end of Trump's tenure going mm-hmm. into Biden. So where it really becomes popular consciousness is during the campaign cycle.
Yeah.
And it's definitely true that a certain set of the people around him, such as J.D. Vance and Cash Patel, they kind of ran on it quite a bit and talked about it. And his son talked about it quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are proxies for the campaign. So that's non-trivial. I mean, they pretty much speak with the campaign's voice in every other dynamic. Why not this one?
Yeah.
And then lastly, because I just can't help it. I mean, I don't follow her, but she's always on my feed. Laura Loomer. I've been telling everyone for years that Marjorie Taylor Greene is a Trump hater. Today, I was vindicated. I've had to deal with this nasty bitch lying about me and pretending to be pro-Trump for years. Well, I have yet to be warning everyone, MTG is and always has been a Trump hater. Told you. And that's because at this event, and this was done by several other people, there are people put Trump in, like Trump's picture with Jeffrey Epstein on this stuff and basically saying, like, well, this, yeah.
Okay, so they're blaming Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie, yeah. Particularly Marjorie Taylor Greene, for the signs that people are holding behind them.
Yes. Yes.
Which are clearly not like the polished campaign signs that you see when they're made by the campaign and handed out to people. These are like homemade signs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
And this is one of those things that, you know, the left is very jadedly, and this is where there's a point to Michael Knowles and Insurrection Barbie on this, and that there is a point to, I mean, really, that is disappointing from the Democrats, is that they didn't spend any time giving Biden a hard time about Jeffrey Epstein.
Right.
Those only Republicans and MAGA-like people.
Right, and of course, it plays into their political strategy to do this to damage Trump, because clearly now this is something Trump doesn't want to do, and so of course they're going to put pressure on it to happen to try to embarrass him, gum up the works, all those things,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. A second to that is that there is another thing that happened this week was the House Oversight Committee had done had issued a subpoena for more Jeffrey Epstein files to pull it all into one place and to get a certain set of other files. What they got was 34,000 pages and a bunch of videos and audio of Jeffrey Epstein related documents from the White House. That was announced on the 2nd and came out this morning, I believe. According to the calculation I was able to find, about 97% of the documents were already in the public domain, but they were scattered all over the place. So now it pulls it all in one place, only about 3% containing new information, such as Customs and Border Protection flight logs from 2000 to 2014. I haven't seen any like results of this yet, like analyzed by people who are super familiar with it. But what I did is, and a part of this too, that I thought was one of the more interesting parts, is they released a bunch of the video with the people blurred out and with names redacted and dates and stuff like that. Other than, you know, when the interview happened, like when people's birthday is and stuff like that, how old people were,
mm-hmm.
The accusers talking to the police in Florida in 2006 and 2005.
Gotcha.
So this is building the initial Florida case.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I watched all the ones they had. They only had a handful. They also released, you know, one of the interesting things about that too was across the different accusers, there was a lot of consistency there. At least one of the narratives that's been pushing on this is something like Acosta dropped the case not because he was intelligence, but because the case was weak. You know, I get that there's not a lot of material evidence. It's a he said, she said. But when you look at the aggregate of all the girls that we even have access to, and these ones are making references to other women who we still don't have information on, the whole case as it comes together of what we understand of it, from the original Miami Herald reporting to like the other things that built on top of that since then, I fail to see how it wasn't a substantial threat, you know, and at least that's part of it for me. I mean, I'd never actually taken a look at it before, but it was strange, you know, like at least it seemed very consistent, and it wasn't coerced at all. In the sense that we don't have the full tapes, but I'm very sensitive to leading questions, you know, in an environment like that, like a detective building the case by saying, well, what happened next? Did he do this? And they're like, yeah, it seemed to be done pretty well overall. I mean, there was a few parts where you don't get access to it because it's censored out. Not like the gross stuff. That's still in there. But just where you don't really get the full context because you're like, they already had a conversation, so they're kind of returning to a conversation. Where there could be an accusation of leading question, but overall, it was remarkably consistent across all these girls. So Two things I did note too is that one person said this that no one else did, was that there were pictures of naked people on the walls
in Epstein's home.
In Epstein's home. Mm-hmm. Now, when one of the files that were released, I didn't get to watch the whole thing, but I watched it on fast forward and I skipped about. Is a walkthrough of a policeman holding a camera. And it's not a body camera. This is 2005. We didn't have nice body cameras back then. This is like a camcorder. And you can hear like creaking around and like the guy breathing kind of hard going up and down the stairs and stuff. I saw no pictures like that on the wall. So something happened.
Those pictures were also referenced in the documentary on Netflix, the series on Epstein.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
At least the victims mention them and they talk about them anecdotally. I don't know that there's any police footage or other footage of them. I know there's footage of some or photos of some, but I'm not entirely certain like when those were captured or by whom. Mm. But so anyway, you're saying that the discrepancy there is sort of, you know, a question mark that points to maybe there's some discrepancy in the testimony from the accusers.
Less so that, more so that something happened with the house between when that happened and there. Now, maybe they just redecorated and it's just very convenient redecorating.
Just scrubbed the evidence.
But there's lots of stuff. Like there's a bunch of like samples on the ground at one point where like material samples for like redecorating. Mm. A lot of things are in weird places or look unpacked. Stuff like that I thought was weird. But that could just be life stuff.
Moved in a hurry or something like that?
Like maybe he went to Israel while he was on bail.
Yeah.
Something that's quite interesting that happened. And then another one is that they censored the name of an assistant. And I wonder if that's Maxwell or not.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's strange that they'd censor the name of the assistant. I mean, I can understand because it's just an accusation in a court proceeding. But curious who the assistant was.
Yeah.
And if we can subpoena them.
Yeah.
Get them to testify. Seems important to understanding. I mean, we understand this 2005 era pretty well. And the question is whether or not it extends to this larger thing. Because really 2005 is about just Jeffrey Epstein being a pedo. And trying to get to that next place, which is, well, did he share his pedo-ness with other people to create compromise? That's the question.
Right.
And then another part of this was, and this is a little bit disappointing from the event, is there was a lack of emphasis on the other files that are in the discharge position, but aren't focused with the media narrative, such as, these are just the questions I have, and I can't get over them, man, is there were reports that there were cameras in the room in the New York mansion. We got the video of the walk through the Palm Spring place. Why don't we get a video of the mansion? You know,
good question. Good question.
That would be a great video to have if they did that.
Yeah.
Confirm it at least, you know, just confirm that that's real because there are reports about it. Also tons of CDs with information on it, binders of information, all this kind of stuff. The Daily Mail article about the safe with all the videos in it. Do you remember that? The CDs
yeah.
in it.
Oh, yeah.
What happened with that? Like, that seems really important. I mean, even just from like is the FBI any good? Like, are they real people that take their job seriously?
Yeah.
You know, if we're going to have a federal police force, maybe they should leave important evidence right in the middle of an investigation of like a very important, powerful person, you know? But they just went missing. What is that? You know, like, I want to know. That's what I want to know. And then what about the ranch in Arizona? What about the island? Like, there's a ton still there. Mm-hmm. And then what about Jean-Luc Brunel? He's the guy in France. He was like a close associate, did like the modeling agency thing. Mm-hmm. What happened to him? Do we know? How did he die in France in prison? Like, was some, that would be relevant to the...
Wait, he died in prison too?
Yeah.
Weird.
So that's an interesting one. We got a bunch of other information though that I do think is interesting. So keep an eye out. We got stuff from audio clip files of Maxwell's deposition. We have prison footage again. The same prison footage. No, again, just the one camera. All the other ones are out, right?
Same blurry orange thing passing by the window.
Yeah, I didn't confirm if that was also there on that one, but yeah. So that was that. That's what happened with that. So James O'Keefe also came out with some interesting Epstein news this week. Interesting timing. Joseph Schmidt, Schnitt, acting as a deputy chief, Office of Enforcement Operations at the DOJ. He went on a date.
Oh, he did. With James O'Keefe?
James O'Keefe!
I work for the Department of Justice.
Okay.
Been there like 23 years. I'm an analyst.
He looks like he belongs in a
club. I'll be acting deputy chief of our office for a few months starting next week. Yeah. I work closely with like all the federal law enforcement agencies, and the U.S. attorney's offices, the prosecutors and stuff. The thing is, it's interesting because I do deal with so many of the agencies. I think we are prisons, the Marshal Service, the FBI, U.S. Attorney's offices.
What do you do?
Yeah. So, and I didn't want to play the whole thing, but pretty much some of the things he claims is when talking about the Epstein files is they'll release it, but they'll remove all the Republicans and conservatives. That does kind of sound like jaded political calculus,
thing.
But maybe it's a real plan. I don't know. Thousands and thousands of pages of files at the DOJ's possession, which is an important claim. Like, that's a factual claim.
Okay, are these specifically files we haven't yet seen?
Well,
or are they the same ones?
It's in specifically in the context, I believe. I haven't looked through the full video. I've saw the extended video, but it's edited.
Yeah.
Usually, James O'Keefe will put out like the full unedited conversation. So the context, I believe, was implied in the edited version that it's about stuff that hasn't been released.
I see.
Right. Okay. So he's confirming that's a lot more out there. That Pam Bondi is a yes man. She wants what Trump wants. She's doing this because Trump told her so. And I do think it's interesting, too. The Daily Caller came out with a thing. And I'm just going to note this because it's relevant in a sense that everyone's doing something that someone else wants. In this interview, there's a section here where Trump pretty much says, in short, you guys can follow an exclusive full transcript of Daily Caller interviews President Trump, where he says he's the biggest supporter of Israel. In fact, he bombed Iran for Israel. So everyone's doing something for somebody. You know what I mean? You know, Pam Bondi's doing it for Trump. Trump's doing stuff for Bibi.
Trump's not doing shit for us, though.
It does add a little weight to like the whole, do you remember when this all went down? Like when he decided to say it's all a big Obama scam right before Bibi came to the United States?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting timing.
Well, and there was also, I saw an edited clip of a joint press conference between Trump and Bibi where basically he deferred every question about U.S. foreign policy to Bibi.
Yes.
Which was odd, to say the least.
It's understandable when it comes to Gaza, but it's also understandable that, you know, it's funny. You would think if you just looked at the numbers that they were our client state, right? We give them billions of dollars.
Yeah.
So we should have some amount of weight, especially when we pay such high cost for our support for Israel and the international scene, to be like, have our own opinions about what they should do.
Seems reasonable.
You know?
Yeah.
But he didn't want to do that.
It's like, it's like investing in a company. You put that much money in, you want to have a seat on the board.
Exactly. You think we would, like we do with Intel, you know, same thing.
Exactly.
Although those are non-voting shares. I don't want to spread fake news. But you see what I mean, though? We want to have shares in this.
Can you imagine Trump in the Intel boardroom? God, that'd be fun. That'd be so fun.
You're fired.
You're fired.
Chips are dog shit. All right. So, another one that he says is that Ghislaine Maxwell got a sweetheart deal.
That's a new one. Never heard that before.
Ghislaine.
The S.
I know. I can't. I got to put it in there. I'm hooked on phonics, guys.
It's all right.
Ghislaine Maxwell got a sweetheart deal because she was a convicted sex offender in her case, and yet she was put in a minimum security prison. They aren't supposed to do that in those cases, which is interesting. And that's confirmed. Like, they looked up the code for the district that she was prosecuted in, and that, it's like never happens that you put someone like that in minimum security. You might put them in low security, but not minimum security. The difference being like low security being like it's a prison, but it's not like you're in your cell all day sort of thing because everyone's a violent psychopath. But minimum security is like you get to decorate your room,
it's like a college dorm.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's more like
she can put her posters up and, you know.
Like Shawshank. Yeah.
Have a microwave in there.
Uh-huh. She can make a burrito.
Maybe an Xbox.
I'm sure that's torture for her. When you grow up as British royalty virtually and a socialite, it's got to be really bad. But not for us regular folks.
I'm
it's probably gotta be
bummed for her. Can you hear the bummed in my voice?
She's a victim. That's what her her story is. So so in his and he literally says they did that so that she would be quiet and not blab, right? Because they put her in a low security prison. She might do that. So this is not someone untrivial. Let me just return to that real quick. This is someone very high up in the DOJ saying this. At a minimum, if speculation, it's well-informed speculation. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Even if he's not speaking from like, well, I was in the room and this is what Bondi said or Trump said, it's still substantial speculation we wouldn't have heard unless he was being, you know, on a date with a camera. So, yeah. And then, of course, he denied it. And that he didn't say anything he didn't read in the media. He put out a statement. Yeah, he met a woman named Skylar. So maybe this isn't the Asian one on dating. Doesn't sound like a Skylar.
I mean, you know, she could be an Asian American.
That's true. I just got a white person name. What?
Nothing. I just had a joke and I'm going to leave it.
Yeah. So, and then it was, so he denies that he did anything wrong and, that's that. So.
Well, nothing, that's a nothing burger.
Yeah, right. So I'm like, he denies it, but I'd feel bad if we didn't say he didn't deny it, right? So meanwhile, Trump is doing really important work, right? Like he is, you know, you can't understand why his coalition fell apart. Look, he saved Cracker Barrel, guys. He saved the old guy from Cracker Barrel.
Mr. President.
Thanks, President Trump. You know, we got real serious policy changes like this. Like we're going to change the Department of Defense to the Department of War. Awesome.
You know, this is just like, this is just like the deep red meat.
I know.
You know.
But it's like, it's such a nothing for like,
it is.
Don't get me wrong. I want him to succeed. I want him to do important things for the American people. I want the American golden age he was talking about. I want zero income taxes and auditing the Fed. You know, I want all that stuff. I just... You know, but I feel like you're patronizing me with this stuff, you know? Like,
oh, that's exactly
what's happening. We renamed a department. Woo! You know, like, come on, man.
Well, and again, man. It would be different, too, if, and I can't forget who it was. I think it was Ron Paul that made this point. You know, it'd be different if the policy, the way we handled war in this country also reverted to the way we handled policy at the time when it was called the Department of War, not the Department of Defense, which is Congress declaring it legally. Mm-hmm. You know, not just the president willy-nilly sending troops around the world at his will.
Yes. Play the sound again.
Which one?
The one. Thanks, Woodrow Wilson.
That's our villain music, yeah. If you guys haven't picked that up.
But I was just kidding when I said the Jews. All right, so Michael
not
Tracy. Jews. Yeah.
The S is also silent in Jew. Okay.
So I do want to note this because I do think it's interesting is Michael Tracy. So Michael Tracy is a former Young Turks reporter and in a good skeptic. I like this, especially as a left wing guy. He's been a good skeptic on many issues. And he's brought this to the Epstein case in the last couple weeks. And I think he's got an interesting case to be made here. So here's an example of one of his criticisms from the event of one of the ladies who was at the event. Quote, I'm an Epstein survivor because at age 21, I might have hooked up with some older guy. Be sure to check out my podcast.
Ooh.
But yeah, this lady.
Lisa Phillips?
Lisa Phillips, yeah.
She has a podcast?
Yeah, she and it won an award.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Women Podcasters Award.
And the Best Indie Podcast Host or Hosts nominee.
Yeah. I mean, we can't get that award. We're like totally out of that box.
Is it because we're not... disenfranchised women of color?
Yes.
Or victim
and not victims of
anything?
Nope. No victims.
You are a victim of hairlessness.
That's true. Male pattern baldness is an actual thing that like you can't choose. It happens to you.
And I'm a ginger.
And you're a ginger, right?
I think we could get this.
We should have a ginger award for best ginger podcaster.
I think I might 100%. Win.
Yeah. Is it the disabled Olympics at that point? It's just bald guys and genders.
The hair Olympics.
The hair Olympics. So so that's like an example of kind of like the griftiness going on that he's accusing other folks of. Like another one, Virginia Roberts, the kind of original grifter of the Epstein story. you know, she was the one in the Prince Andrew photo that everyone has seen. But she was also, in her own testimony, admits that she was on very heavy, whew, doses of Xanax, ecstasy, and weed at the time.
Wow.
You know, as a 16-year-old, given massages and going to Jeffrey Epstein's place. So, you know, it might be that she misrecalled Alan Dershowitz because she was on so much Xanax, or it might be that she couldn't really back up any of her claims and it's actually all legit. Virginia Gough, the question is whether or not you feel like she is a reliable witness to base your case around. And unfortunately, what he exposes is that the original reporting from the Miami Herald, a.k.a. Julie K. Brown, who's built her whole journalistic career off of her reporting on Epstein at the Miami Herald, she does use her a lot in her memoirs. Virginia Roberts Gouffre.
Jouffre? But I don't know.
Jouffre?
Jouffre? podcast brought to you by Meat Sauce.
I love that stuff. It's so tasty.
I know, it's great.
All right, so now I'm just hungry.
Can we get a couple French dips in here?
Yeah, right. That she wrote this memoir that later became like a work of fiction that is really spun into some accusations that Julie K. Brown was overly reliant on Virginia Roberts' story. Mm-hmm. And that's not trivial, right? I mean, the question of whether or not they are a credible witness is important. He's also done some questioning of Whitney Webb's stuff that I think is not nothing. Quote, one of Farmer, so this is on Maria Farmer and all the after Epstein's, you know, case happens, there's a fund set up to pay the victims of Jeffrey Epstein. And there's been lots of lawsuits, you know, to get access to that trust of big chunk of money that Jeffrey Epstein put into a trust to pay out his victims. One of Farmer's co-plaintiffs is soon to be Julia Bryant, who told Alex Jones Show that she witnessed Epstein turn into a reptilian creature, after which she was abducted by a UFO. So
not exactly the most credible testimony of all time.
You know, and that's the thing. And like it's a difficult one, right? And another one is Sarah Ransom, who was at the event. She was an adult escort at the time that she claims that she ran into Jeffrey Epstein.
Mm-hmm. So yep. That's a different positioning of your testimony.
And it's also part of the lawsuit with Farmer against the government, who appeared in media pieces. Writing about Jeffrey Epstein before he committed suicide about how there are Jeffrey Epstein victims going back to this time. And it's not that it couldn't have happened, right? It's just a he said, she said thing that we don't, if we have high journalistic standards and high standard of our concept of guilt in the West, it is really important to our conception of justice. It's a bit of a he said, she said sort of thing when it comes to it's not when it comes to the massage therapists the teenagers that he was lured into being massage therapists in his house in Florida in the mid-2000s. That's a different sort of case than what we're talking about when it comes to getting flown around in New York City with Prince Andrew, which is what we're now kind of talking on that level at. And how solid is that case? Do we have any evidence of Jeffrey Epstein actually giving being like, hey, here's a beautiful woman, take her in the back. There's a camera back there. Ah, gotcha. You know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That story is Whitney Webb's conclusion. And he's kind of undermining that case a little bit. Like, well, we do know that he was a pedo, but did he actually ever do pedo stuff with other people? What's our evidence? Like our hard evidence of that? And we don't have much. We have innuendo. We have accusers. But a lot of the accusers are a little bit wacky. On the other side of that, remember Jim Acosta?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Pizzagate.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the weird hot dog thing and pizzas and a lot of money in hot dogs.
And pizza.
And you remember the pictures, the artwork, Jim Acosta's artwork?
No.
Okay. That's really disturbing artwork.
Is this artwork that he makes?
That was in his home. Oh. You know, and there's a, don't look it up. You can't unsee it. But it is it is terrifying stuff. It's all very pedo-like. And it's very much about the loss of innocence and about demons, sleep demons, like cuddling with little kids, and like it's you want to burn it with fire. Like, in anyone who made it, bought it, looked at it too long, like, it is just, to the everyday person with any kind of moral compass, absolutely disgusting and not art in my view. It doesn't inspire to a higher claim of heroism in my view. Now, my point there with that is that like insinuation that sits there with this stuff of what we're looking at when we see what those people, if you're doing spirit eating and things like that, that culture is, that if you're a young woman caught in that, maybe you don't come out totally sane.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's, if that theory has any grounding in reality at all, perhaps one of the ways where it keeps itself insulated is by giving someone, a young teenager, tons of ecstasy and a Xanax so that they're an unreliable, you know, person after that.
Yeah.
You can drive someone crazy with enough psychotropic drugs.
Well, I mean, what was MK Ultra?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not suggesting that this is like some CIA op to like brainwash these women, but there's like, neither was Charles Manson. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't, but even in the, like, the baseline story, like the Helter Skelter story, he's like a dude who brainwashed a bunch of people because he had LSD and he was super maniacal. Yeah. Like, that's the baseline story. So that's like, even if you believe nothing else, you just believe the court documents. If you don't, like, what's his name? O'Reilly. No, he wrote Chaos, Secret Histories of the 60s.
Who wrote Chaos?
Yeah, I can't remember his name. You look it up.
I have it on my bookshelf.
Even if you don't believe that and you just believe the standard story, you're still sitting there with like a, it's possible to do that to somebody. So, I mean, at any case, these women could be a victim of something near that, right? So I'm not saying that therefore you should believe them. I'm just saying therefore there's room for doubt, even if you're looking at the, like, how reliable are these witnesses? But his case is that really what's happened here is we've taken and confused the 2005 story with these other accusations that have happened by older women who have made a tremendous amount of money in this story that they're telling about Jeffrey Epstein, who aren't the most reliable witnesses and have no physical evidence. Understandable. In the sense of, like, he thinks it's a moral panic moment that we've really blown up this individual story of, like, him being a pedo, which he probably was, into, like, this is what he was doing. And he kind of claims that Whitney Webb and martyr Daryl Cooper are kind of contributing to this moral panic.
And benefiting from it by, you know, a lot of publicity around their storytelling.
Clicks and views. That's the idea. And I did read the exchange between him and Daryl Cooper. I think his case on Whitney Webb is stronger than Daryl Cooper's. Daryl Cooper's really like looking at everything and just like summarizing for the listener. He's not doing original reporting here. Whitney Webb's doing a little bit more original reporting and like pulling together threads. And I felt like in the case of Daryl Cooper's exchange with him, it was mostly like a nitpicky sort of thing. It was like, well, on Tucker Carlson, you said this, and that's not exactly right. It's fair criticism, but it's also a little bit nitpicky. You know, I mean, someone's doing a live interview off the top of their dome. They're going to misspeak.
Yeah, yeah.
Another part of this that is interesting that I did think was, and this, I pulled this from actually his Substack and one of the commenters in Substack, because I think this is really interesting when you look at it from Trump's perspective, is that the original framing of Julie K. Brown's series was kind of an attack on Trump in the first place.
And what series was that?
This was her series about Jeffrey Epstein.
Documentary?
A series of articles that she wrote.
Oh, is this the Miami Herald?
Yeah, okay, yeah. Gosh, this, yeah, and yeah. This is the later reporting from the Miami Herald, but this is when, where we got the, what's the word? Accusation that Jim Acosta claims that the reason why he didn't prosecute was because Epstein was intelligent.
Different Acosta, right? Alex Acosta?
Alex Acosta. Yeah. Did I say Jim Acosta?
You did. Who's there Jim are Acosta? Two. There are two Acostas. Isn't Jim Acosta the, not the AG, but anyway.
That was an Acosta who said this. that article was quote, perversion of justice, how a Trump cabinet member gave a serial sex abuser the deal of a lifetime. Now, if Julie K. Brown is not as good of an investigative reporter as we thought, and she was more reliant on unreliable witnesses than we thought, Maybe we shouldn't believe that Jim Acosta actually said that he was with intelligence.
Alex
Acosta. Sorry, I just want to say Jim Acosta. I don't know. I'm sorry, Jim Acosta, if you're out there. My bad, dude. I'm not trying to throw you under the bus, man. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So like, there's a string to be pulled at there that does, I think, if you're not understanding what Trump is saying when he's saying this is a Democrat hoax in a way to like attack him, maybe that's it. You know, it's the legacy of that moment. But that's a pretty indirect attack at Trump, right? That's right. Like just saying Jim Acosta, you know.
Alex
Acosta gave him like
to be
deal.
Clear, Jim Acosta is a CNN correspondent, so he might deserve a little bit of ire also, but not for this.
Fair enough. So, I mean, it was originally more of a Me Too kind of narrative and more of a, and like, he's kind of claiming like this is like the leftovers of Me Too. So, yeah. Interesting claim.
I could see that. Yeah.
So, anyways, that's what happened this week with Jeffrey frickin' Epstein. That story's not dead yet. It's not going to die anytime soon. We shouldn't let it die. We should insist on actual disclosure in a much more substantial way.
It seems like it has some zombie vibes at the moment. It's dead, but it's undead.
You know, that's a certain way to characterize it. I think that's right. You know, because I think people want it. They really want to have releases that are substantial. And they're just being met with, if you don't support the president, you're a bad guy on this issue.
Yeah. The weirder part to me is the resistance from the administration, the really hard about face that it seems like they didn't think we would notice when all this started happening. You know, when it went from here are all the files, binders, blah, blah, blah. Maybe that was kind of a limited hangout situation where they hoped that this would just assuage all of the concerns of the internet, you know, army that's digging into this stuff for, you know, a decade plus now. But it didn't, obviously, because we learned very quickly, well, this is all stuff we've already had. And then all of a sudden, it's just like a complete 180. And now it's like, if you insist on this, you're against the president.
Right.
That to me is not a good look for the administration at minimum.
Well, I mean, and then it leads credence to this whole idea that the reason why they're not going to release it is because it looks bad for both sides, right? It could be a deep IRI or NED plot, right? Or some tangential plot or a fund that's really important to the funding of the political campaigns that's, you know, wrapped up into it. Like the Hillary Clinton Foundation, maybe there's something like that on the Republican side and they don't want to undermine their money. You don't know, right? And it's unlikely even then to be like, here's Jeffrey Epstein who wrote down who slept with who, you know, like in his diary, you know, like a little
dear diary.
Yeah, you know, like
I had the prince over today. He likes girls.
You know, you don't
more
know.
Tomorrow.
It's so macabre. Holy shit.
It is.
But that's exactly right. Like, it's unlikely that there was ever a smoking gun, but the information is really there, right? Like, what happened to all that key stuff I brought up earlier, right? Yeah. That is still there. And then lastly, that doesn't have to do with the child sex trafficking stuff. That has to do with the transactions and the money laundering and the gun running and what happened there.
Yeah.
I want a full explanation of his role in Iran-Contra. He's really well tied into it, but I want some detail, man. I want to understand that.
Yep.
Reason why, if that was connected, then that means he's involved with the CIA. If he's involved with the CIA, then was he still at the time? That's a valuable question. You want to play the song, didn't you?
I was just thinking you might be going somewhere with that. Yes.
But, yeah. I mean, and not to mention, as we've covered on the show quite a few times, with his connection through Ghislaine Maxwell,
yes,
father,
nailed it.
Who was definitely Mossad.
Yeah.
And is that a Mossad family or is that just something that died with their father? Who knows?
Good question. My fear about the trove of CDs, you know, of potential evidence of these actual acts is that they've long since been destroyed.
Yeah.
I see the rationale for keeping that around for blackmail purposes to keep people under control. But obviously we live in a digital age. If I were to be involved in that situation where I wanted to maintain that control over people but destroy the evidence in FBI's hands, it would go missing and it would be digitized on some secure server somewhere, maybe Israel or wherever.
Yeah, right.
And that stuff would be gone and it wouldn't be in evidence anymore. Right. But it would still exist.
Right.
Just in case.
What you really hope for is like an analogy to what we got when it comes to the disclosures that actually gave us all those most important disclosures of the Church Commission, which was that the CIA just screwed up. Like they destroyed all the MKUltra Project Stargate documents. What happened was that there was just one facility they forgot about. that right. then was revealed and then brought all that stuff to the fore, most of it being financial, some of it being actual documents and methods and stuff like that. Yeah. But very few on MK Ultra methods, but some of that on Stargate and whatnot.
There's a couple CDs and they're labeled Friends reruns. But they're talking about different Friends.
He was just pirating Friends for some reason from Napster.
Look, you know, it was a special time. It was a different time.
It was a different time.
You could find whatever you wanted on the internet.
Yep.
All right. Anyways. Well, I think that's enough for that for today. Thanks for tuning in for this episode of Human Reaction. For David Rand, I'm Joe Sheehan. We'll see you in the next one. Peace, y'all. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.